This is Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 a.m.
Right now, you can text us for Wally, 2057. Good morning, Wally.
Good morning, everybody.
How are you doing, Wally?
Well, other than having a bit of a cold at the moment, so if I start coughing in the middle of the session, you know, I've got that coughing disease that's going around in our part of the world. But other than that, I do actually get out to do a little bit of gardening now and again. But
And how's business?
Actually, it's interesting. Mail order is very good. I think retail, garden centres, Mitre 10s, etc., for this time of the year, they're a bit on the slow side. But then again, the weather has still not really gone into a nice spring. We're still getting cold periods. And unless it's a nice sunny day and it stays that way, people don't tend to get out quite so much unless they're very, very keen. The keen gardeners, they'll go out in the middle of a thunderstorm and garden, which is a good time to garden.
I'm always scared because I talk you up so much and people are going to think that you're paying for this, but we just appreciate your generosity coming on our show. But I've got to say, that magic botanic liquid, every time I use it, I'm shocked. Can I tell you my latest thing?
Please do.
I've planted out 175 mountain beech trees, and I'd grown them in our nursery. But when I say nursery, just a place where the rabbits are fenced out. And they would be, on average, I guess, half a metre tall. So I had to dig big holes. And I put some in, maybe 15 that were a bit on the brown side. I thought they were dead, but I thought, oh, well, I might as well just put them in as an extra. And then I planted all the trees out. I sprayed the foliage with magic botanic liquid. Later on, we got a bit of nice rain. Those trees, Wally, I can't even find the ones that were looking off colour. I don't know which ones they were because they all look the same. They're green. They have grown, they have shot up, every one of them. And I put it down to MBL. It's a miracle product.
It is, yes, humate and fulvic acid. Overseas has been known for quite some time. It's more of a newer thing here in New Zealand, though commercial growers have got onto it, either in a powder form or however. But here's a funny story. Now, you're always in for a funny story, aren't you?
I'm always in for a funny story from you.
Yeah, okay. Now, many, many, many years ago, in Palmerston North, there was a Chinese gentleman who had a fairly large glasshouse complex, commercial one, in which he was growing tomatoes in, right?
Yeah.
Some time later on, he actually owned the shops. There was a four-square shop, a fruit shop, and a little bookshop in the front. He owned that too. And over a period of time, I bought that part out, and then later on, I bought the glasshouse complex. Now, the story went like this. When he built this glasshouse complex, and it was heated, he had hot water pipes going through, a oil burner, but originally I think it would have been a coal burner, to heat the water so he could grow in winter time. Now, people would come from miles around to buy his tomatoes. In fact, his tomatoes had such great flavour that Massey and DSIR went down and checked it out. What was he doing to get such great flavour, right? And in a sense, he was doing nothing. But in actual fact, when he built the glasshouse complex, in those days we had a gasworks, and the gasworks, of course, took coal and made and extracted the gas from it, and what did you end up with? Coke. Do you remember that, Coke?
Yeah, I do.
Right, okay. Now, he put tons of Coke, which is basically a waste product in those days. That could still be burned. But he put all this down in the glasshouse, right down deep, right? And then he put the soil on top. Coke is the same as humic and fulvic acid.
As MBL.
It's magic botanic liquid. And the experts could never work out why his tomatoes had such great flavour. It was because they were still getting this humate and fulvic acid coming up from the great big deposit of Coke in the ground. In fact, at one stage, I went out and I tried to contact a few of the coal mining places, because I thought if I could get hold of coal dust would be very good as an additive to your garden.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, say you can buy coal, but then there's a matter of crunching it up and getting it down to a nice fine powder, which would make it readily available. But, of course, we don't have to do that because we've got magic botanic liquid already in a liquid form, and that's where it comes from. It comes from lignite or low-grade coal, and it's extracted, and it's from prehistoric times when the fossil fuels were made, and it's got all the minerals of those times when the planet was mineral rich.
Do you think the Chinese market gardener, like this was a thing historically that Chinese did he find it out by accident? Was it a plan? What do you think he was doing? Because it's not an obvious thing to take the trouble to do all that.
Maybe he had knowledge that I'm not aware of, or alternatively, he was looking for very good drainage.
Yeah.
Because it would have a very good drainage aspect to it. The interesting thing, when he had a glass house full of tomato plants and they were all number 8 wire, right everywhere, up and down, crosswise, etc. And, of course, he would drop a string from the number 8 wire, which is about 8 foot high, down to the ground and peg it with a bit of number 8 wire into the soil. And then he would twist the plant as it grew up the string, right? So no staking, it was all done on the strings. Then on a nice sunny day, he would go into the glass house and he with a big stick, he would hit the wires and the whole house would vibrate.
Pollinate them.
That would set the fruit. It's vibration that sets the fruit of tomatoes.
How do you mean?
Vibration. Now, it's simply this. On a sunny day, your tomato plant will create pollen, right? It won't on a dull day, there won't be any pollen there. But on a nice sunny day, it'll create pollen. Now, that pollen has to move across to set the fruit. Now, if there's a little bit of a breeze or something, yeah, that works. In some commercial growers, big houses, they put bumblebees in. Now, the bumblebees don't actually do any pollination whatsoever, but when they're flying around, the vibration of their wings sets the fruit. Right. The vibration of their rings. Now, if you've got a tuning fork and you bang it against the table and go like that, it vibrates. You hold that near the tomato flowers, that will set the fruit. Or you can tap the plant. Just tap it to make it vibrate, and that will set the fruit. He did the whole glass house by hitting the wires.
Crazy. When you say set the fruit, you mean the pollen goes to the stigma?
Yep.
And
sets the fruit. Yep.
Isn't nature wonderful?
Yes. Yeah, it is. And at that point of time, there must be sufficient moisture. If there isn't, you end up with a problem called blossom end rot. This is where the tomato, when it forms up later, has this black patch underneath at its bottom. And that's because of lack of moisture.
Goodness.
Because the moisture moves the calcium across the pollination and sets the fruit.
Okay, Wally. we're going to learn about making tomatoes tasty.
Right.
Yeah. What are the tricks?
Now, the first aspect, of course, is what type of tomato are you going to grow? Because some will have different flavours, some are tangy, some are sweet, et cetera, right? So people need to experiment a little bit with different types of tomatoes to find out which type of tomato suits their needs, whether it's for sandwiches, salads, or for preserving, making tomato sauce, et cetera, and, of course, they may have to grow two or three or four different varieties to get the things if they're doing several applications, right? So a bit of experience here, but once you know whether it's beefsteak type tomato or whether it's an heirloom type or a grape type, a cherry type, whatever, right? Now, that's all very fine. So you've got the base, but now we've got to put flavour into it, right? There's two aspects to flavour. First of all, you need a really good tomato food, right? Now, unfortunately, many of the tomato foods don't make the grade. Many years ago, when I had a garden centre, I had a chap from Fielding, a Mr. Ford, who used to come across, and he was a tomato connoisseur enthusiast. Right. And he said to me one day, he said, which is the best tomato food? And I had half a dozen different, you know, brands in the shop. And I said, I don't actually know, but I'll find out. So I went and consulted with some experts in fertilizers and so forth. And we came up with a certain formula in which I made up and I gave to this chap to take it home and feed to his tomato plants. Well, a few months later, he comes back and he said, my God, that tomato food is the best I've ever had. He said, the flavour is really, really superb from my tomatoes. He said, what is it? I said, it's a secret. So was born Wally's secret tomato food, which comes in two forms. It's either the straight food or alternately comes with neem granules or neem powder, which helps with the insect problems with your tomatoes, right? You put some in the planting hole or you put some on the soil surface. It's a slow release and it really makes a difference. And I get compliments all over every year. Oh, your tomato food is just magic. It does the trick, right? So that's the first aspect. You've got to have good food.
I just Googled tomato food, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it pops up, Tui has garden food, Odorings have garden food, all these different garden tomato foods, right?
Right, yep.
They're not all the same, are you saying?
No. There's a problem. One of the ingredients is quite expensive. And because it's expensive, they don't put much in. And it is a vital one for having really good flavour.
And when do you apply the garden food and how often, the tomato food?
Being slow release, when you plant your plants, like I said, you put maybe a little bit in the planting hole, so it's in the root zone, and you sprinkle some on top of the soil, next to but not against the trunk of the plant. Of course, remember too, when you're planting tomato plants, the most important thing is you plant them deep because they will root up all up the trunk, right? As you will see with a mature plant later on, you get these little bumps down near the base. That's aerial roots. It wants to create more roots. And the more roots you have, the better the plant. Remember some years ago we used to have super toms?
Yes.
That was a nursery down in South Island who used to graft a particular variety of tomato to each variety. So it was two lots of roots, right? Super time. The success of the plants was because of the big root system. Later on, that nursery fell over and the people retired, they sold it, they went. But now we see grafted tomatoes. They can't call them super toms because that's a proprietary name. So they call them grafted tomatoes. And once again, that it's a double root system jointed at the base so the plant has bigger roots. Now, you cannot bury a grafted tomato deep, but you can with an ordinary tomato, and then you'll get roots all the way up. So it becomes a superior tomato as a result of having a bigger root system, right? So that's the key to it. The other aspect is amount of sunlight, because sunlight, of course, is converted to carbohydrates by the plant photosynthesizing, right? Which happens during the day. Now, that carbohydrates is your sugars. So the more in there. Now, anybody who has fruit, which is tree or plant ripened, will be sweeter than fruit that is picked before it's ripe off the plant and then ripened off plant, right? The worst situation, of course, is in the middle of winter in New Zealand, where we get tomatoes brought in from Australia or somewhere, and those tomatoes are actually picked green. They're not even ripe, right? But while they're transporting them to New Zealand, they apply, I'm led to believe, a certain gas which makes the green tomatoes look red. But they're green tomatoes that look red. And that's why they have no flavour, no taste.
Jeez.
They're hard. And you're eating a green tomato that looks red. My God.
Isn't that disgusting?
Oh, no, it's life. I could tell you lots of stories.
I know. I live in such a happy little world, and then you keep exploding it.
Yes, we are being fooled all the time.
We are.
We are, yeah.
I never realised. I never realised you're sort of this level of dishonesty in the world, to be honest. Like, I thought you could trust a red tomato as being a ripe tomato. But I now know, Wally.
Yep.
And that's why they're useless. I don't buy them. They're useless.
Yeah. They are, yeah.
You may as well eat a piece of paper.
Yeah. Well, depends what the paper's made of.
With Marmite, yeah. Oh, my goodness, man. I just can't get over that. So sunlight, yes.
Yep. Now, that now becomes a problem because we don't have sunlight we used to have. Now, I go out and I have a look at the sky, and even if it's not hazy or whatever, it's not a blue sky anymore like it used to be. It used to be radiant blue, right? And with white, fluffy clouds. Nowadays, you don't see much of that. Instead, it's a hazy blue. It's murky blue. It's not a nice blue. And that means there's lots of particles up there in the atmosphere which has changed it and reduced the amount of sunlight that gets onto the plants. As a result of that, the plant is not making the carbohydrates that it should be making if it was getting good, strong, direct sunlight, right? So we use my secret formula here, which is not secret at all, called liquid sunshine. Now, I think we've spoken about liquid sunshine before, mm-hmm. right? Liquid sunshine is very simply, you take a tablespoon of molasses, you dissolve it into a liter of hot water. Then after it cools down, you add some magic botanic liquid to the mix to give it that extra bit. And then you spray that over the foliage of your tomato plants or your fruit trees or your garlic, which is now getting rust on it, to give it carbohydrates, all in this stone fruit tree, which has now got curly leaf, but it's got fruit on the tree, and that fruit will maybe fall if it doesn't get enough energy to hold it. So you can go out quite happily and spray the tree with liquid sunshine, and that will help hold the fruit. With your garlic, and this is important too, to get yourself a reasonable clove or bulb and nice cloves, you need to get more carbs in, even though it's got rust there, which prevents the leaves from photosynthesizing so well. You can supply the extra carbs with your tomatoes or anything else.
What's the ratio of molasses to water?
1 tablespoon is what I recommend to a litre of water. You could go 2 tablespoons.
It doesn't glue up your sprayer at all?
No, because you've dissolved it in a good quantity of hot water.
First.
So it's.
So you dissolve it into hot water, then pour it into the cold water?
No, then you put it, when it cools down, then you add it to your sprayer. And then you can add also at the same time some magic botanic liquid.
Okay.
Now, there's a danger here, because in the magic botanic liquid, there is, I believe, microbes. And if you put that into a trigger sprayer and seal it, those microbes will start to breed because of the sugars from the molasses, and then it will start to balloon.
Oh, and blow up.
And it can blow up, or it can force the liquid out through the sprayer part to ease the pressure. So if you make this up and you leave it, you unscrew the top of the sprayer to let it air, right? And then, of course, no pressure, and it's all good to go. You can use it and put it down, pick it up, use it again.
Would my beech trees benefit from a bit of molasses?
Yes, it would.
So and any plant would enjoy it?
Yes, and your chickens will, if you have molasses in your chook food, which you can get. Yeah, like we have one which comes from farmlands. Right? Yeah, from farmlands I get it. And they have a variety of chicken food which has got molasses. And, of course, it gives them more energy. In days gone by, and I was talking to a lady just the other day, and she said, oh, yeah, I remember as a kid in the morning, Mum would give me a teaspoon of molasses.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. My mum used to do that.
Yeah.
How often would I need to be spraying them with molasses?
As often as you want to. You could do it daily. You could do it once or twice a week. The more you do it, the more carbohydrates the plant's going to take in. Now, an interesting thing happens. The leaf of your plant that you're spraying with molasses on a regular basis will get bigger and bigger and bigger, right? Because it's getting this freebie stuff coming in, and it says, oh, good, I want more of this. So it makes a bigger leaf, and, of course, it's got the energy to do so. And with this happening, it means, too, whatever sunlight is out there available to the plant, it's got a bigger surface area to collect it. It's like having a bigger solar panel. The bigger the panel, the more energy.
It's not like putting them on welfare, they get lazy.
Putting who on welfare?
Plants. No, they don't have to do the work. Like, they don't get lazy and sort of don't photosynthesize because they're getting everything they want.
No, they will still naturally do it. They don't do it at night, of course. The other aspect, of course, is they take in CO2 and release oxygen, right? It's a cycle that happens during the day. And that is another failing that's happening as they do the stupid climate thing and try to reduce the CO2 levels everywhere, plants suffer because as a result of not having sufficient CO2, they can't grow. Simple as that.
Mm.
Which is all a great big conspiracy theory. Where
that's right. You and I both. So I'm going to mix up some molasses now, and I'm going to be putting it with my MBL, and I'm going to spray all my plants, but also my beech trees. Now, I recall last year, I'm certain I recalled last year, that there's a particularly good time of the day to spray it. And you know what? I couldn't remember. Was it morning or evening?
It depends. What you're spraying with molasses and MBL can be done during the day. It can be done in full sunlight quite safely, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you were spraying neem oil or an oil, it has to be at the end of the day. If you're spraying pyrethrum, it has to be at the end of the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to get some molasses directly after this show.
Now, that's a point too. I wrote a thing a while ago which a lot of people asked for, which I called the article Future Proofed. And in my research, because you can go to the supermarket, you get a little bottle of molasses. It's not cheap. But I found in places like farmlands or on the internet, you could get like buckets of molasses.
Well, I've just found one. You can get 25 kgs from PG Wrightson's for $70.
Yeah, and there's even better deals out there.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, and that's a lot of molasses.
That's a lot of molasses, tablespoon a litre.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It's a byproduct, is it not, of brewing or something, is it?
Of sugars.
Sugars.
Yeah.
So you're giving them sugar. Is it from making sugar, refining sugar?
I've never looked into exactly how it's produced, but yes. I think it's the second sweetest thing. There's agave liquid, which I've got a bottle of. That is supposed to be the sweetest thing going. And that comes from the plant, agave plant, and which, of course, they use that liquid to make tequila.
Ah, well, I've looked up, because I go to farmlands to get my chicken feed,
mm-hmm.
and I've just looked them up. They have blackstrap molasses, 25 kgs, for $67.95. 25 kgs would last you years, wouldn't it?
Oh, it depends how many chickens you got.
Oh, yes. I was just thinking of my plants.
Oh, I'm sorry, 25 kg. I thought you were talking about chook food.
Oh, give it to the chooks too.
Oh, look, it would last you many years.
Yeah. How do you give it to the chooks?
Well, of course, you could. Well, you don't have to, because you can buy it from farmlands already.
In their feed.
Go. It's in their muesli mix. But you get farmers which will spray molasses over their paddocks, which gives the cattle more energy and makes the grasses sweeter for them. And it will encourage grass growth. Down Southland, I know I've been told farmers that do that, particularly when the growth is slow through lack of sunshine or the weather or whatever.
Wow. And you could do it through winter to give them a boost, right?
Yes, for sure.
Well, I never. What else? Is there anything else I can do to make my tomatoes tasty? I tell you one thing I'm not doing this year. I'm not growing those little cherry tomatoes. My wife loves the cherry tomatoes. So we grew a whole lot of cherry tomatoes. I got so sick of picking those suckers.
Yeah.
You sort of pick 10 and you got, you know, not much to eat, and you get a nice bigger tomato and you pick one and it's enough.
You mean you pick the little cherry tomatoes, you cut them in half and you try to make a sandwich.
I know. They're
useless. You need a dozen of them. Yeah.
They're useless.
Big beefsteak is the way to go.
One slice covers your sandwich.
Here's a story. this is a few years ago down in Blenheim. There was an advert put in the paper. A chap was asking for old bras, woman that had old bras. And anyway, it occurs to a bit of
Did he get arrested?
And, well, you know, was he a bit funny, you know, wanting bras and so forth? So a reporter went and contacted him to find out what the story was. Now, he was growing these tomatoes, which fully mature can weigh a kilo or 2 kilos. Really big tomatoes, you know. One slice, you've got a sandwich. And he wanted the bras to support the tomatoes because the weight of them and bras were ideal, you know. You hung the bra onto the steak, you cut the tomato, and away you go.
God, life is too funny. Oh, well, I'm going to do the molasses trick and I'll report back because I'm loving watching these plants grow and be so green. I just love it so much. And I got a little special sprayer that I use just for food and for MBL. And it doesn't take you long to go around and spray them. I got like a 5-litre sprayer. Wee plastic sprayer costs next to nothing. So I'm going to put a bit of molasses in that next. I'll get some from the supermarket because I don't go over to Cromwell very often because that's where I get my big 25 kgs. That's amazing. Plants are beautiful things, Wally. What else can I do to make – is there anything else I can do to make my tomato flavoursome?
Now, here's an interesting point. That chap from Fielding that I talked about, he told me he could tell the difference between a tomato – that had been watered with rainwater or filtered water in comparison to a plant which had been watered with tap water with chlorine in it. Now, that is probably pretty edgy taste buds, but he could tell the difference between it. So once again, the chlorine in your tap water...
Text machine.
It means that... It's affecting the plant and the plant's ability to have really good flavour. So ideally, if you're using tap water in your garden, you get one of our housing and filters, which removes the chlorine, and then your garden will look just about as good as it will with MBL. Add the MBL to the combination, and you're going to have an incredible garden.
Fantastic. Now... We're running out of time, Wally, but we're going to have to do the handling the pests later. We've got to do some texts. First up, is that okay, Wally?
Yeah, good to go.
Oh, loving the gardening chats and tips. Thank you. Next challenge is what framing is needed for the cucumbers. Mini, apple, Lebanese and pacia are the types I'm trying this season, but don't want to buy expensive frames. Would appreciate your suggestions. Also, some advice about asparagus. My bed is 8 years old and appears to be diminishing each year, despite lots of fertilizer. From Joanne.
Right. That's the key to that, I think, the fertilizer. Fertilizer, of course, is getting garden fertilizer, whatever. It's not enough, not for asparagus. Asparagus needs real food. So... chook manure, horse manure, cow manure, any of the manures. And in the wintertime, when the bed is dormant, you go down the beach and you get a whole lot of seaweed and you put that on top of the bed. Do that and you'll bring your asparagus patch back into good, big, fat stalks again.
So the 8 years is not a problem?
No, no. I mean, to say... It's a good producer. You don't have to renew the what's-names. Ideally, each season at the beginning, when you find which ones flower and you've got the female plants that sets the berries, is you get rid of those roots and replace them with males because it's the males with the how's your father stalk is what you want.
I didn't know that. That's too much information. Oh, Wally, asparagus. What about the frames for the cucumbers?
Okay. Of course, cucumbers can run across the ground, all right, but it's not nice. A simple steak, and then you train it up the steak. You could twist it around the steak maybe, but little nylon ties. Like you go to the garden centre, you get a ball of nylon ties, yep, right? And that expands and allows growth to happen even when they're fairly firmly tied. But one of the tricks, particularly with pumpkins and squashes, is I grow them over the shrubs. So I have the plant here, with its in its bag or in the ground, with a whole lot of compost, manure, etc. And then when the trailers come out, I take them up over the shrubs, and then you've got all these beautiful pumpkins hanging in the air on top of your shrubs.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
Here's the next question. Here's from Dominique. Are lawn cuttings good as fertilizer to put on a designed small area to grow potatoes or vegetables?
Yes, they are. They also will provide heat in the early times of the season. So what you do is you mow the lawn, ideally not when it's in flower and in seed, because you're going to introduce all those grass seedlings in, which become weeds in your garden. And you put them in through a trench and the heat, and cover them with soil and plant your plants, and the heat from below will help speed up the growth, and of course that becomes food. Or you can mulch it around existing plants, but not against the trunk, because as it breaks down, if it's against the trunk of a plant, it can then cause collar rot, rotting at that point. So just back a little bit, an inch or two away from the trunk, and then there it will actually heat up the ground too, cause better growth, and away you go. The other one of my favorite tricks is having a plastic rubbish tin with a lid, in which you put manure in, like animal manure, horse manure, cow manure, and so forth. And you can put also some grass clippings. You can put in bits and pieces into there. Water, stir it up, and the beauty of using cow, horse, or any other manures other than chook manure is that the weed seeds that are in the manure will float to the top. You scoop them off, like we said once before.
Yeah.
Get the sieve out from the kitchen. Get told off for using the kitchen sieve.
You don't tell them the kitchen
sieve. No, you don't.
Here's one. Would you suggest putting carpet into a tunnel house? If so, why? From Annie.
I know people that have used carpet for weed suppression. Carpets with wool, of course, the wool is actually good food. It will break down, it will rot over a period of time, and it will supply nutrients into the ground. The danger with carpet that I've experienced a few times in the past is, as with mulches in wet times, underneath trees or citrus or whatever, which don't like wet feet, a carpet holds the moisture really well, and of course the plants suffer, roots rot, and so forth. So during the drier times or with good drainage, carpet on the ground, yeah, good to go.
Well, Rowan is with me on the cherry tomatoes, and someone has suggested you go to the Bin Inn or somewhere like that for molasses. They used to give it to their calves.
Right.
Wally.
Yep.
We've come to the end of our time.
I'm in tears.
I feel a bit that way. I feel as though we don't have enough time these days. RCR is getting busy. Tell me, what's your phone number again, Wally?
0800-466-464. That's 0800-466-464. 464. And it's the same as our website for a mail order, which is www.0800 466 464.co.nz. People can ring me, go on the website, whatever, and get some of the magic botanic liquid or any of the other products.
Well, I can say this, Wally. If you were running in the US presidency, I'd vote for you because you're authentic.
Oh.
And I've learned from you that in your products, you sell good stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, people appreciate it.
It means a lot to you, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, because you get feedback from the gardeners. I've been using your products now for about a year, and my garden has never been so good. Yeah, it's because the products are basically natural. They enhance the soil life. They make everything better. There's a quick story. A farmer just recently told me he bought this farm property a couple of years ago, and prior to him having it, they used all sorts of fertilizers on it, etc. He said, I'm not going to do this. He said, I'm going to just put lime on it, nothing else. He said, it took a year or so, but now I've got worms back. Everything's come back right. My grass is healthy and green. My neighbor put superphosphate on his property. His grass is yellow. Nature will come back if you let it.
For sure. Wally, you have a great day. Thank you for coming in. We're truly blessed to have you. And like I said, you can find, just Google. I just Google Wally Richards Gardening, and up his beautiful new webpage appears. And I got to say, that MBL, it is magic. I mean, it's a big claim to make, but when you spray on a plant that's looking a bit off, man, does it just come back. Plants I was going to throw away have come back.
Right.
It's extraordinary stuff. Wally, have a great day.
Thank you. All the best.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.